Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. This is your partner in success, Denise Griffiths. I am an online entrepreneur and a virtual assistance industry expert, and I want to welcome you to the Online Entrepreneur Audio Interview Series. I have created this audio series to provide you with a practical guidance from other very successful entrepreneurs to learn the key secrets to how they build and grow their online businesses. My intention for this series is to empower you to achieve your dreams and live a successful and very accomplished life. Today I'm really excited. I have the privilege of being joined by Tony Bodo of Tony Bodo International. And I'll tell you straight up front, Tony is one of those people who has this amazing ability to make you think at your highest possible level. And I invariably come away from a conversation with him with my mind just on fire. He makes me think at just levels I can't even begin to describe to you. You'll see that today when he starts talking. Tony is an expert coach who specializes in aligning an organization's operations and culture in the service industry. He has a portfolio of alignment projects with financial results ranging from $10 million to over $1 billion. It's pretty impressive. Through projects focused on customer satisfaction and loyalty, Tony has produced results with double and triple digit improvement in critical scores. Tony built his success by engaging employees in a way that releases their passions and that allows them to create profits. Through his coaching program, Profit Tornado, we'll hear more about that later, organizations can develop the internal expertise required to align their own operations and culture. Profit Tornado engages every employee in a web-based interactive environment that advances their personal and professional success through an upward, ever-expanding spiral of positive emotions, self-confidence, and creativity. Tony also provides specialized coaching, which provides significant impact in areas that show particular cultural or operational challenges. So all of that being said, Tony, welcome, and thank you so much for joining me today. You really have to tell people what your schedule's been like. I'm really honored that you took time out of an incredibly busy schedule to be here, and I'm just so thankful that you're here. So can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how Tony Bodo International came to be and how Profit Tornado came to be?
Absolutely, and thank you for having me on your show. It's a real honor for me to be here with you. Well, I have worked for three public companies and over the last 10 years. And in the process of working with these companies, I began to see the same patterns developing over and over again. I'm formally educated with an MBA from the University of Tennessee, and I studied, you know, the theory of constraints and manufacturing principles and that. But I was working in service organizations. So I kept struggling with how to align the people and the thinking of people to produce the outcome we wanted, because it's not like a machine in a factory. So I've spent a lot of time researching this and trying to understand this at a very detailed level, so that as I'm working with individuals in these organizations, I could move the organization substantially forward. That's where the idea of Tony Bodo International came from. I really wanted to create an organization where I could develop the programming, the coaching that's necessary for these organizations, whether I'm present or not, whether it's coaches that I have working with me or whether it's an online program. And we're working to move all of that forward substantially, because we're in a new economy today. And if we don't understand that economy, we get really frightened. And when we get frightened, it shuts down our creative abilities and our ability to follow a plan. So I took this approach in building a program that's deliverable online first, and then we move from there to personalized coaching if necessary. Tony Bodo International has a variety of offerings, if you will, products, coaching methodologies, and improvement methodologies. But it's really my passion to create an environment for organizations to grow. And I believe, from all of my experience, that an organization can only grow to the extent that the people within the organization grow. So that was the kernel or the seed of what created Tony Bodo International. And actually, I want to share that I'm coming to you today from L.A. I've been around the country this week, New York City and in L.A. Now I'll be back to D.C. and then back to my home base, Nashville, sometime next week. So I really appreciate the opportunity to get to speak with you in my schedule here. We're actually doing the pre-release viewing today of Profit Tornado. I'm with a masterminding group. There's about 21 of us, and we help each other in their business or personal lives. And I have seen some amazing results in this process, and I've been part of many of the results in this process. So they've helped me build my business, and I've helped them, and they're going to be the first ones to really see what Profit Tornado is all about.
I've seen some of it, and it's astonishing. I mean, it really is. I have to kind of ask you a question, though, here. One of the things that I learned in my corporate background is that a lot of people, and I'm not going to make a blanket statement, excuse me, but a lot of people in the corporate background or sector simply don't want to share with other employees or people that may work at a slightly different level. They're afraid. And I think your program covers a lot of that because you really want people to work at their best and share resources and information rather than hug it to their chest.
That's a great point. One of the things I learned a long time ago is that most people compete. And we compete when we believe there's a lack or there's limitation, when there's not enough. We have to compete for results. We have to compete for resources. So one of the things I address immediately in Profit Tornado is the abundant mindset. We really have to come in and see that there is plenty around us. There is more than enough around us. And if we could tap into that mindset and really change how we think, we no longer get fearful because we don't have the doubts and the worry that there's not going to be enough for me when it's my turn. Most organizations today are structured in the command-control hierarchy, and that hierarchy actually creates the very fear that prevents creativity because people are always trying to compete for the next job up the ladder. The problem with that is when you create that environment, you don't get the best ideas surfacing. You get the best politicians surfacing.
That was my point. So you exactly nailed it on the head. It's a shameful thing, but that's what happens. So how do you overcome that with your program?
Well, what we do is we actually help people become aware, first of all, where are they? You know, what is it in their organization that they're fearful of? They have to address that fear and become aware of what are their doubts, what are their worries. The economy today, great example. We'll talk more about this later. But the economy today is in a state where a lot of people say, I don't have the money or I can't afford this. Well, in reality, nothing has changed dramatically in the economy. It's the speed that people are spending money that has changed. So if I decide suddenly because I hear something on the news that I'm not going to spend money because there might not be enough tomorrow, what happens is I'm not making a decision to continue to help the economy grow. The economy doesn't grow because there's more money. It grows because the money continues to circulate faster and faster. So when that happens in an organization, when you've got resources that are constrained, what we try to do is help them become aware of this and then recognize that there's enough to go around. There's enough creativity. Most people have so many ideas they can't share them because they either don't know how or they're scared that if they share them, they may lose their job. Or someone may steal the idea and they won't get promoted. So we have to deal with that abundant mindset by really getting in and helping them see that in truth, there's plenty around.
And that's so profound, I'm almost speechless. That's exactly right. And I've seen it from both sides of the fence, if you will, from the corporate background. And now as an online entrepreneur, there's a huge disconnect in how people think between the two. Major disconnect. Online entrepreneurs, you, me, people like us, we don't see scarcity. It doesn't occur to us that there is scarcity, but other people do, and it's often painful for me to witness. It really is. So I think what you're talking about is getting people to just understand that there is no scarcity unless you create it in your own head.
Absolutely. Everything we see, there is reality out there. Everything we see, there's real things. But if you understand psychology and neuroscience, what you begin to see is that our perspective is how we interpret reality. So all of us look around us and we see these limitations. Either it's the chair you're sitting in, the desk you're sitting at, the computer. There's limitations. That computer's not everywhere, if you will. It has physical limitations. But as you begin to understand that, in fact, there's a lot more to it. You can't see what's inside the computer screen. You see the surface. So we only see the two-dimensional side of the universe, if you will, the surface. And once you start digging deeper and looking at what's inside, what is it that makes this work? Look at people the same way. We observe someone else's actions, and we immediately interpret those actions in light of what we would have done based on our knowledge of the situation. And oftentimes, in reality, we wouldn't have acted the same way because we don't have all of the knowledge that this person had. We don't have the behavior patterns or the habits that they have. So we really have to get in and understand what it is someone is thinking. And as soon as you shift that thinking and shift their perspective of things, it changes how they look at the world. I'll give you an example recently came up for me. I was looking at creating this opportunity, this event for people to come to. In the process of doing so, I was thinking, how many people can we get there? A few hundred, a few thousand, what would it take? And so I was on the phone with one of my partners in another business, and he said, well, I'm working on a 100 million name list, and we're going to email out. And I sat there and just absorbed that for a second. Going back to my direct marketing background, I said, 100 million names, if I had 1% response rate, that's
what? You know, you can't even calculate it.
You know, and you get into this calculating mind, and you're like, wow, there's no room for a million people where I want to do this event, you know. But you begin to see the opportunity that's out there. There's 6 billion plus people in this world. There's absolutely no lack for customers. The problem I see is that most people don't have a great value statement. We're still thinking about it as if we're in a physical world instead of recognizing that most decisions are made from a spiritual realm or this psychological realm. We want to understand value. Value is subjective. Money is objective. And understanding the difference between the two of these is really what helps people move into this mental abundant state where they don't get worried necessarily about how much they have because they recognize taking an idea, which is really a spiritual thing, and transforming that through some energy that they apply, they can actually create the money that they want in their life.
Well, I will tell you that that's exactly correct. That's how I've done it, and that's how I will continue to do it. Once I based my services on value to the client, value to myself, and didn't even worry about how the money was going to be paid or what kind of money was going to be paid, that was the end of it. Everything just went through the roof after that. Once I quit looking at it from a money perspective, the money came. It was really amazing. It was an amazing mind shift.
And my perspective on why that happens to people is that when you have an entrepreneur is usually very passionate about what they're doing. I mean, they're literally putting everything on the line to make something happen. They have a belief that is so strong and so powerful that they absolutely want to make this thing happen, and they will do whatever it takes. And that's the key. Most people don't do whatever it takes. But if you get into the shift where you say, I believe that this idea is the best idea ever, you literally fall in love with the idea, and you release this passion you have within. Once you start directing that passion to a purpose, in other words, how you want to make something happen, and you see it taking place, it unlocks something inside of you that you probably have never had happen before, and I see this in entrepreneurs a lot. It'll unlock this place in them, and they'll just take off. It's like light speed. They'll just be shooting across the sky. Things will be happening left and right for them. But it's because they finally got into alignment with who they really are. And a lot of what we're doing with Profit Tornado is actually releasing, once you get into the abundant mindset, we start releasing this passion within. We actually ask people, what is it that you're passionate about? And we have a series of exercises we go through. And I'll just give you an example of one of those exercises. If you don't know what you're really passionate about, what lights you up, like if you were laying in bed at 2 a.m. and you had an idea about this thing, you would jump out of bed, flip the lights on, and start writing the idea down. That's passion.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You have to have a journal laying by your bed at all times if you're an entrepreneur.
Absolutely.
It's mandatory. That's rule number one.
Everyone should have a journal because everyone's got a passion within them, and some people have multiple passions. My passion is to teach and coach. And I just love seeing the light bulb go off when, you know, someone says out there, comes up with a great idea. It's like, wow, they finally connected the dots. That, for me, gets me energized. And when that happens, I just really get excited. So I keep putting myself in positions where I can see that light turn on, and I can see people really go to the next level in their thinking. And as soon as I make that happen, or as soon as they allow it to happen, it changes who I am and it changes who they are. So one of the things I really recommend you do if you're an entrepreneur or you just want to unlock your passion, you're not sure if you want to be an entrepreneur yet, it seems too risky, that's fine, I understand. What you need to do, though, is sit there quietly for about 30 minutes and think back to all of those points in your life where you were just really happy, filled with joy. You wish this moment could go on forever. Time stopped, stood still, whatever, however you want to describe that. But you know the feeling I'm talking about.
Yeah, those
think
aha
back
moments.
To those times. Exactly. If you can identify those times, start writing about them. List them on a piece of paper, a couple sheets of paper. Just write everything you can. How were you feeling? Why were you feeling that way? Go through this exercise. What happens then, you begin to express the passion within. And you've already started the change process, but it's really easy. And then once you have all of this written down, you can start reading through it and begin to identify what's common about all of these different stories. And as you begin to identify what's common, you know, find one word or one phrase that's common. That's your passion.
Mm-hmm. And you know what happens too, Tony, and we've talked about this, and I've talked about this with people on my team and people, honestly, that I would have never met without knowing what I know now. But a couple of things. Number one is when you know what your passion is and you know what you're excited about and you start focusing on it, and you don't even need to focus on the financial aspect of it. Trust me, that will come. And it will come with stunning quickness if you're doing it, if you're living to your passion. But what happens is that not only do you align your own passion, but other people are very receptive to your passion. And all of a sudden, suggestions, tips, resources, invitations, introductions come out of the woodwork. People that you would never think to talk to about a certain product. I talked with one of my web developers this morning about web development. All of a sudden, we took off, and he gave me four incredible resources that I knew nothing about. I was totally excited. Wasn't even on our list of things to talk about, but I needed it. Somehow, he came into alignment with my need, and there it was. I was stunned. I had to just sit here for a few minutes and take a breath.
It's interesting you say it that way. I run into a lot of people who, when they, I think everyone at some point in their life has felt the flow or has been in the flow, and that's actually a psychological term. I look at it from a manufacturing perspective. Flow is just where a product at the beginning moves all the way through the process nonstop. There's no wait time at all. It just flows like the ocean. It's there. But when people get into that mode of the flow, you can accomplish amazing things in a very short period of time. And there's been a lot of studies in the last 15 to 20 years, and even more recently, in the last 2 or 3 years, there's been some great research that's been released, both in the psychology community as well as in the neuroscience community. And there's this talk about the law of attraction and the secret and the movie and all that, and a lot of people have mixed views on that. But if you understand scientifically what's happening, when you focus on what you're passionate about, it changes your emotional state. It changes how you react to things. It also changes in your brain. There's a part of your brain that's called the reticular activation system. That part of the brain literally filters everything. You have millions of stimuli coming through at every moment. That part filters through what's most important. So you can be driving down the road, talking on your cell phone, drinking a cup of coffee. I hope none of you are right now.
No, I don't do that.
But you could be doing this, and suddenly the cars in front of you stop, and you're talking on the phone, and you're not paying attention to driving because it's a habit. Suddenly, the phone drops, the coffee, you know, drops, and you hit the brakes because your reticular activation system triggered something that's far more important than the conversation on the phone. And so it caused your body to react. Now, in our lives, what happens is a lot of us, we've built these patterns, these habitual ways of acting up, and these behaviors and beliefs and paradigms, and so we live habitually. 90-95% of our life is living habitually. The way you get up in the morning and get ready in the morning, that's all habit. Because you could not possibly process everything that's happening in the moment. The trick is, and I learned this, and I began to apply this, if you understand what you're passionate about, and you direct yourself and say, this is what I am, all of a sudden you reprogram the reticular activation system, so now you begin to see these opportunities around you. And seeing opportunities is one thing. It gives you more confidence. But as you start building the confidence and as you start talking to people, people sense your energy and they sense your emotional energy growing. And there's been some great research. A Harvard Business Review in November had some great research on authentic speakers. And they say that before we actually talk, we communicate the emotion and people pick up the emotion a fraction of a second before we actually say the word. And if those two things are not in alignment, if our emotions are too out of alignment with what we're saying. In other words, if we practice our speech and we're not really passionate about what we're speaking about, that comes through in the message, not in the things we say, but in how we react. That's why you have one salesperson who's phenomenal and another salesperson who is, you know, on the lower 10%. It's not because they're saying different things. It's the energy with which they're infusing their words. It's the energy with which they're addressing it. So it's not necessarily that training needs to change, you know, as far as what they say or the closing language or anything else. It's a matter of getting them into a state where they release the energy within in a positive way. That's what energizes other people.
You're absolutely correct. So how would a corporation go about doing this? Because, you know, when you're talking about salespeople, there are some salespeople just flat don't want to be a salesperson, and you can tell. You know, they're doing it by rote. They're kind of reciting. You know, they're plodding through their day. And what if that's really not their life calling? Is there something you can do to help this person?
Absolutely. I would actually argue that everyone's a salesperson. They've just they're stuck. They may be selling the wrong product. If you're passionate about what you're selling, you can sell it to anyone. You can sell ice to the
Eskimos. Are you talking about selling? I'm sorry. Are you talking about selling or marketing?
No, I'm talking about selling.
Selling.
Getting
okay.
someone to ask. Selling is the asking process. I'm going to ask you, I'm going to close you, and I'm going to receive the money. That's essentially the sales process. Very brief, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But everyone is a salesperson. Every child, when they're born, as they're growing, they constantly ask for things. So selling is like the first thing you learn. Exactly. Now, it's marketing that takes a little practice. And kids learn how to market because they begin to cry when they don't get what they want. They begin to yell and shout. These are all things. It's a form of marketing. It's not the type of marketing we want to have in business. But if you look at it, people may be very good at marketing and not very good at sales.
But
you may have very good sales.
Close. They can't ask
exactly.
for the sale. I got you.
And
I hear a lot of that.
They just don't know how to make them ask. And a lot of times you can go to T. Harv Eker and other people that have great coaching programs on this. But what they find is that there's this blueprint. There's this paradigm that people have about money. And so they won't ask for money. And that's a big thing that you need to shift. So, again, I believe everyone's a salesperson, but I don't necessarily believe that every product is their passion. So as an organization's moving through this, they really need to focus on identifying the passion. And some of the better organizations in this process, what I've seen them do is that they will go and talk to their individuals, the leaders, the management team, will talk to their employees in their department, and they'll begin to work through this process of understanding what the employees are passionate about. And then they'll start giving them objectives. So maybe it's something they do outside of work on the weekend, you know, playing in a band or doing art or whatever it may be, something completely unrelated to work. But the manager starts giving a little bit of advice on maybe how they could go about and make something happen. You just shifted that relationship there that now the employee may be excited to come back to work because they just got an aha moment. Like, it's okay to talk to my manager about this? Wow. I'm not going to spend all day talking about it. But as I begin to release this passion in my life, I get creative ideas because I'm no longer in fear, doubt, and worry that help the business. And as the business begins to grow, as that department begins to improve, you see the spread from the company.
Okay. So where do we go from there? I mean, what happens after that? I think I know the answer to this, but I would like you to explain it. You've got an employee that all of a sudden he's a little bit more interested in coming to work. He's showing up. He's offering. How do you get him to further just kind of release that passion, that energy, you know, that spontaneity? Sometimes you really do need that in a corporate environment. Just be spontaneous. What I find in a corporate environment and always did was that, and this may sound goofy, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but that intuition was absolutely lacking or left at the door. People just did not seem to use their intuition much. Do you find that?
That's absolutely on target. One of the things that I've seen, and I'm going to address your question in a few parts here. What we ran into as we were doing the research for this and really developing what Profit Tornado would teach and how we would go about this is that we teach the passion. We get you to identify your passion, become aware of it. That's the first step. Then we begin to give you exercises to start releasing that passion in your life. Immediately after finishing the passion exercise, you go into purpose. So purpose is really the driving reason or the driving way in which you're going to make this passion happen. So one of mine is my passion is to see the light of the aha moment. My purpose is to coach and teach people. And it doesn't matter what type of job I've ever had, the one thing I found common in those is I loved it most when I was teaching people, when I was having the opportunity to share with them. So we move you from passion to purpose, and then we go from purpose to vision. So purpose is really, I look at it this way, it's like the passion is what lights the soul up. If you see a silhouette of a person, it lights the entire person up. The purpose is what's in the heart. It lights up the heart. And you'll feel it there too. A lot of people tell me this. They say, when I've identified my purpose, I feel my heart just release and I feel so much better. I feel so much more alive. Now the vision is mentally. It's the head. You use the mind here to create the vision. And you say, okay, what do I want to become in 30, 60, 90 days or in 5 years? It doesn't matter how far away it is. You have to start building that vision within your mind because it's a mental process. And then as you build that vision, we begin to create goals. And these goals are very specific. They're not too far away. They're usually things you can do in the near term. You may have some longer goals, but you cannot identify, like on a project plan, between point A and point Z, all of the contingencies that are going to happen. And so what happens is as you get through this process, you may be on step C or D or E, and suddenly there's a roadblock. That is absolutely how things work. Because you're going to levels you never imagined possible before, so you could not see what was possible when you started out this project. 70% or 80% of all IT projects fail. It's because they try to create a project plan before they know ultimately what's going to happen in the process. Right. You're planning from the point of person being a much lower level, and as you learn and grow, you reach higher levels of awareness and understanding, and more resources are available to you, more opportunities, so you begin to change what the end state is. You're building upon that vision so it becomes something greater. So you have to be flexible in the process. I often say, don't get attached to the process. Get attached to the vision that you want to accomplish. Mm-hmm. And I'll refer to a point, if anyone's familiar with Scripture, blessed are the poor in spirit, one of the Beatitudes. I look and say, it's not about being poor, it's about being poor in spirit, that you're so full of your vision that that's the only thing that matters. You're going to hold on to that, and you would give everything else up for that. So in process of giving everything up, you have to also give up the project plan. If it's not going to work this way, I'm going to give that up. I'm going to sacrifice that for something greater, which is the actual way I'm going to accomplish my vision. Too often we get tied up with the how, the process of getting there, and that's exactly when we fail because, again, we get doubt, worry, and fear set in. And so I can't be creative about a solution.
I think a lot of people look at those processes and systems. It's almost like getting in your cubicle, and it's a safe zone. It really is. For a lot of people, they say, well, I've got this wonderful plan. I've got this outline. I need to stick to this because this is how I'm going to reach my end result. And if they can't give that up, they're really in trouble. But it goes back to what you're talking about, people who are passionate about their idea, their vision. I will tell you from the heart, we don't stop. It does not occur to us that we'll fail. We hit roadblocks all the time. We go around them, over them, under them. We blow them up. But we don't stop. It just doesn't occur.
I love the way you worded that because I've been dealing with that myself here, not for myself necessarily, but with someone else I'm working with. I'll admit I've dealt with it myself a lot. What happens is as you reach this new state of becoming, as things happen, even in the creation of Prophet Tornado, there were processes that didn't work the way I thought they should. Again, I got too attached to the how. So I'm teaching myself every day as I teach other people too. But I would get too attached to the how, and what would happen is if that how wasn't working, it would momentarily shut me down.
Momentarily.
And depending on how... Yeah, momentarily, because I made a choice. I said, okay, I'd have become aware of it, and say, okay, if that's going to shut me down, if I can't deliver it that way, I still am going to deliver it. So what are all the other possibilities? And I begin to open my mind up to these other possibilities. See, I just reset my reticular activation system. So now I'm aware to new opportunities because I told myself it's important. This vision, this goal is far more important than the process of getting there.
Mm-hmm.
And the trick in life, and this is where I think most companies, especially in today's economy, are having a bit of a difficulty understanding, it's not about the money. And I say that not flippantly. I really mean that. It's about who the person becomes in the process. That's why entrepreneurs are so good, and they're really the creative force in this economy we have, in this country. That's why America's so great, because of the creative force of our entrepreneurs. They believe in something greater, and it's that vision that drives them forward. But when you get into a lot of companies, large companies, what happens is they begin to manage everything from a calculated perspective.
Yeah.
And they can only see where they are today instead of seeing the vision of something greater. And without that vision of something greater, they're always looking at last week's metrics and next week's forecast. Well, if something doesn't go to the forecast, we don't know what to do.
It makes a headline.
Exactly. And then the headline, the media, just becomes this psychological spin for people that everyone buys in that we're in a bad situation. Mm-hmm. Well, not really. Not much has changed. We just have to move to a higher level of creativity and ask a better question. And someone shared this with me last night in one of our coaching programs. It was phenomenal. The quality of question determines the quality of life.
Oh, I love that.
Made me shift my thinking when I heard that. I was like, that's good.
Yeah, that is absolutely brilliant. Wow. Okay, Tony, so this is really amazing, and I'm being rather more quiet than I normally am on these calls because I'm just taking in all of this information. It's just, I'm actually standing up and buzzing. I think I'm vibrating a little bit. I'm thinking so hard and so fast and so furious. So forgive me if I'm a little bit quieter than I normally would be, but I have so many questions and I just don't want to interrupt you. I think people really need to hear what you have to say. So part of the creativity that you're talking about to me is a shared creativity. I'll be honest with you, when I was trying to work in a vacuum, when I knew that I just knew it all and I could do it all myself, I got nowhere. And I got nowhere for a long time. And when I decided that maybe I wasn't the smartest bulb out there, that I really maybe did need help, and I started opening myself up to mastermind groups and, if you know, the law of attraction, if you will, my life diametrically changed in about an hour. It was really that quick, and I'll never go back to working alone again. Even though I do work alone in my home, I hardly ever leave it. I'm always here. But I am in constant contact with some of the greatest minds in the world, I think. And that creative energy, I almost feel like that goofy movie, what was it, Superman 2, where they put those three criminals in and they whipped them out into space. You know, what was it, Planet Houston or whatever it was. I almost feel like there's a bunch of us and we're on that disc and we're just flipping around the world and spinning and our minds are just in sync all the time, and it's fabulous.
I love the way you describe that, because one of the things that for me was a real paradigm shifter is when I actually went to people and start sharing my ideas. I mean, I believed when I was working for just 5 or 6 years ago, working for a company, and I had all these phenomenal ideas, and I would have great strategies and great plans and everything else, but I never brought those plans forward because I was afraid that if I brought them forward, someone else would steal them and steal the credit for them.
Been there, done that.
And that
and
paradigm
that's
set up.
That's common.
Exactly, and I will tell, I know that there are people probably listening to this right now who have had that actually happen to them. What I would tell you is, because that's what you believe, that's what you get.
That's what will happen, absolutely.
Exactly, and it's not some mysterious thing. It's how the body works and how the mind works and how we interact with other people. If I believe that someone's going to steal my idea, I've set my reticular activation system and I've set my whole psychology and energy up to say, I want to find someone to steal my idea. And
it
so
won't take
you
long either.
Oh, no, it happens very fast. Trust me.
Go to the lunchroom. So, that's all you need to do. Just
exactly.
Be there.
So you start sharing ideas and people, you have to actually release. And now that's why I talk about release is it's releasing. To be able to think about it this way, I talk about giving and receiving in Profit Tornado as well. And if you want to use this example, most of us understand giving. But what most people don't understand is that giving and receiving is an instantaneous reciprocal process, if I can say that correctly.
Reciprocal. I can't do it either.
So as I'm giving you a gift, I open my hands up. Well, what do? You open your hands to receive it. And so it's about openness. If I have a phenomenal idea, but I don't want to give it to anyone, my hand is closed. It's tight. I cannot give that to anyone. Well, if my hand is closed and tight, neither can I receive anything back. So as soon as I open my hand up and I start giving this idea to someone else, I say, this is the type of person I want to meet, and I start becoming aware and looking for that type of person, they will show up.
They absolutely
and the more you
have.
Practice this, the better you get at it.
Mm-hmm. You surround yourself with people that you are interested in, who are interested in what you're doing, and your life will always be just wonderful. And, yeah, you're going to hit roadblocks. You're going to hit those walls. But what I find is there's always somebody who has an answer or a solution or just maybe a word in a sentence, and you go, oh, I had an idea. I've got to go. I can't talk now. And you write it down, act on it, and off you go. It's that creative energy that we all produce together, which is, honestly, it just goes back to America, what America is, the entrepreneurship. This is how we do it. Entrepreneurs are very, very different from small businesses and corporations, and that we share. We're very, very generous. And that's how we make America great.
I absolutely agree. And it's phenomenal to really focus on this and think about this concept of how do we move from where we are today in an economy that doesn't look very healthy.
Well, it doesn't look healthy if you watch the news, which I turned off. I boycotted them a long time ago. I will tell you, in my world, there is no scarcity.
And that's true
zero.
Of a lot of people, actually. This is actually the best time to grow a business.
That's
if
what I
you
think.
Do it with the right principles. And I'll share with you my perspective on the economy, if that's okay.
I would love for you to, because I know people need to hear this.
Why I'm not scared in this economy and why I have no fear or doubt in this economy is simply this. If you look historically through the economy, about 150 years ago, our economy was driven by agriculture. And what did we trade with? Hard assets, gold, silver, something like that. As we moved out of the agrarian society into this production society, mass production and factories and that, we had to change the money system because we needed money to be available in more places, more frequently. We had to be able to exchange it faster because the economy was growing. So someone said, aha, I want to create paper money. Now, obviously, paper money's been around for a while, but the real advancement in the economy was the creation of paper money. You've got to recognize that money is nothing more than idea. It's the idea of the value. What can I do with this money? If you give me a piece of gold, I may say, wow, this is awesome. I love it. This is phenomenal. But the reality is if I don't do something with it, there is no value in that gold. It just represents the ability to exchange value. So when we create paper money, we then create this ability to exchange value more rapidly. Because now I can carry it in my pocket. I can, have it available to me wherever I am. Well, as we progressed through that to in the 1940s and 50s, we began the knowledge economy. And I say we began it then because if you look at the creation of the intelligence services, they demanded understanding intelligence. So that was the beginning of the intelligence, or the information age, if you will. Computers were birth of that time period. Well, they needed something that could transfer value more quickly. So what happened is we created credit, and a lot of transactions today, most transactions today, happen because of electrons bouncing back and forth through computer systems. What the shift that I have seen happen is that we're moving into an entirely new economy. There is so much value that's being transferred right now with absolutely no credit, no cash, and no barter system of physical product. Like me being on this radio show here. We're trading information. Information is so cheap right now. It's inexpensive. We're trading that back and forth. That's why you and I are on mastermind teams. Because we don't worry about what we're going to get paid. We care about sharing ideas and helping someone else. The whole point of an entrepreneur is saying, I can help people live a better life, so I'm going to create this product or this service. Maybe self-motivated first, but eventually they start serving the greater community. because it was just to serve them, they wouldn't actually survive as an entrepreneur. But as you move forward in this economy, I would argue that what we're going to see shift over the next several decades is that we're going to see this shift where more and more value is being transferred through relationships. I can't tell you how often I get calls of people saying, hey, I just lost a job. Do you have any connections? I know you know so-and-so at this company or that company, whatever it may be. Can you get me in?
Mm-hmm.
You know, at least to talk with them for 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
That's a fundamental shift in value there because I'm giving them access to something they didn't have access before. They don't pay me for it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we're going through. In my perspective, that's what we're going through right now is the shift of value. And companies that want to come out on the other side of this, especially in America, I would say, you know, if our manufacturing facilities primarily shift overseas, we have to raise the level of awareness and understanding of this because too much of our society is focused on the physical product as opposed to becoming a greater person. And so if we shift that, we'll begin to see this economy actually speed up and we'll have a lot more value in our economy. So one of the things that I often point to is that if you're exchanging value in relationships, at some point, you do need to make money because money is how we trade physical assets, you know, staying in a hotel room or buying a car, you know, whatever it may be, buying food. But there's a limit to how much we actually need or want there. A lot of wealthy people will say, you know what, I just don't need another $1 million. They'll take it because with it they can do service for other people. But it's not about the money at a certain point for most of these people. It's about creating new value in an economy, new ways to become a better person themselves, new creativity being released into the world. That's what it's really about. And so as you begin to recognize this, more and more of our society, we have over 1,000 billionaires in this world. More and more of our society is getting access to that level of wealth because they've created value. And part of creating value is also receiving back, whether it's new relationships, whether it's money, whether it's credit, whatever it is, those are all things that come back to us in this value exchange, which we then in turn use again to create more value. If you're not creating value for your employer or for the economy in general, then you're taking up too much space.
I agree. So, you know, you're talking about creating value, whether it's for a company or for yourself. And in my world, that means creating a product or a system that has extreme value. How do you focus on the emotional effect that your customer needs and wants? I mean, there's emotion with these things. I mean, look at advertisement. People will buy a car based on the color, for crying out loud. That's an emotion. And that's where a lot of advertisement comes in. It's strictly towards the emotional effect. Can you speak to that?
Absolutely. I've nothing against advertising and marketing, and that there's a I'm in that world in a lot of ways. One of the things that I have seen, though, is that we're focusing more on the physical attributes of the vehicle or the, you know, taking a car as an example. We're focusing on the emotional connection there. And that's powerful because the reason we make a purchase is for an emotional reason. In other words, if I'm buying food, it's because I want to survive. I want to live another day. You know, it could be that basic. But in our society today, for most people, that's not what it is. We're looking at, you know, how do I want to feel? How do I want other people to think of me? Or my perception of what they think of me is really what it is. You know, it's those
exactly.
Things.
You don't know what other people are thinking. I wish people would get over that. You have no
I
control.
Agree.
Everybody listen, you have no control over whatever somebody else thinks. You only know what you think. Pay attention
and
to what you think.
That's a blessing. Trust me.
I know.
But where we go is, what we need to do is, there's three things that I found, and I've actually worked with several companies in the last few weeks here on this particular focus. There are three areas that you can create value, and I say this in my marketing, but it's also really true. I have been able to, if you had a product that was worth $10 or that you paid $10 for as a customer, I've been able to help companies deliver $50 to $1,000 of value for that $10 of money that exchanged hands. So between 5 and 100 times the price. And if you look at a lot of things happening around us today, there are a few companies that are starting to get this or have been doing it for a while, but no one's really developed the theory of it out there. And the three elements that I find in common with these companies, Starbucks, Southwest, Toyota, a few others, they usually transfer not just the physical product, but they transfer relevant information, reams of relevant information sometimes. So if I go to Starbucks, I can actually learn all about the beans and how they roast them and why something's more bitter or something's a little bit sweeter, why it has this flavor or that flavor. That's an information transfer that's relevant to me. If I don't care about that, I don't need it. But for a lot of people, they want to know, why does this look or taste this way? The second, and that's really based on the information age, is transfer of information. The second is the emotional side, which you talked about. How do I transfer value through solving an emotional problem or creating an emotional solution to a problem? Now, again, if I'm looking at a BMW or some other very nice car, they're tapping into emotion, the concept that sex sells. That's very true. I mean, mm-hmm. That's emotion. But there's a third level that only a few companies that I'm aware of have actually tapped into, and that's the community side of things. Look at the value of Facebook or MySpace. They don't make a lot of money in retrospect to the value that they have as a, you know, as the stock of the company. But those companies are worth a lot because they've built communities. Now, when I go into a company and I work with them and say, okay, you want to create a new product line, or you want to re-engineer your product line as it is today, or service, it doesn't matter. Let's take what the price is. What's the price that a customer typically pays for this? And how does that fit within the competitive set, if you will? Once you look at that price point and say, okay, yeah, we're about right. What we need to do then is say, okay, what else? What are those other salient points that the customer may want to make a decision on? And almost every single time it comes down to information or emotion or community. So what I do is I tie all three of those together in this process, and I find a way to offer a community, to offer more relevant information, and to offer an emotional solution or a solution to an emotional problem.
Can
and when I do that, pardon me?
Can you give me just a quick for instance? Without naming names?
Yeah, that's what I was trying to think through.
Yeah.
Yes. There is a particular children's product that's manufactured. And this product is designed, it really is an emotional product. It's designed for separation anxiety. And what happens is that as they're selling this product, and they're just not getting the draw that they really want to have. Now they're getting draw in a very narrow community for the separation anxiety. But I look at the product and I say, well, you know what? This product can actually be used for other purposes, not just separation anxiety. That's an emotional problem, right, or a solution to an emotional problem. So I start pointing out other ways in which, because they were just looking at a very narrow market in that. I said, well, I travel a lot. I said, this product would be good for my kids. You know, it's not that they have separation anxiety, but once in a while they'd like to, you know, hear my voice. There's a recording device, a very specifically designed device inside of this toy. And they would like to hear my voice and, you know I'm there for them, give me a hug, whatever it is, that kind of thing. So I said, you're not just going after one market. Now you can look at all these other markets that are similar because of the emotional problem. And I said, well, now you need to share information. There's a ton of available resources, free resources, through the government, through other websites, whatever it may be, about separation anxiety or related emotional impact. You know, how does it happen when kids are in school? You know, if you have separation anxiety because, you know, a father or mother's gone overseas in the military, now they're in school, and how does that impact their schooling? Grades drop often. Kids stop performing. There's all kinds of things that happen. Divorced parents, same thing.
People in nursing homes? I don't know what the product is, but I'm just guessing.
Right.
A lot of people in nursing homes, there have been studies done that a pet, a dog or a cat in a nursing home can actually add time to people's lives, add to their lifespan. However, you know, given the problems with pets in a place like that, a lot of them won't allow it. But I'm thinking that this might be good for an older person that would like to hear a friendly voice every now and then.
That's a great example. That's an entirely new area I hadn't gone into.
I don't even know what the product is. I'm just guessing. So.
Well, I mean, I don't know that's a problem. I'll mention the product because it's a great product. My Huggy It's a teddy bear. It's actually been featured on Montel Williams' show and a few others. MyHuggy.com. It's a great product, and I have it
it's
for my girl.
So that's older people.
Exactly. I think that you record in there. There's a 20-minute recording device, and so they've been doing this because they actually give them to the military as the families are leaving. You know, are separating. They show up and they've given thousands of bears away, and they
definitely
find, you know, corporate sponsors to do this and that. But they're trying to broaden their scope. And so as I'm working with this, I'm sharing them, you know, here are some other ways to do this. And then there's the whole community aspect. How do you build a community? Well, separation anxiety is really about being lonely.
Right.
So why not build either a virtual community or a real community or some combination of both? And as we work through this process, we actually came up with ways to solve all of those issues. And we created 3 or 4 new product lines, actually, in the process, because we began to see other problems that we could address.
That always happens.
Exactly. And there's no real capital investment at this point, because it's just really about seeing the vision. And then once they saw the vision, it completely shifted the purpose of the company. You know, the purpose was still similar, I guess, but it shifted how they were going to execute. And if you just focus on execution without thinking first and without coming up with the right idea, you're not going to execute properly. So that's been a phenomenal success. They're actually in the process now of going through and moving forward. But that's just one example. One weekend I spent on the phone with 7 different companies going through and helping them go through this process with their companies. Again, something that we've developed rather recently, and I've been working with these companies testing it to see how well it works. And it's phenomenal, the success that they're having.
Yeah. And that goes back to sharing information, sharing resources and community. All
absolutely
very important. To me, it's absolutely critical that you have these things in place. So what happens when you work with these companies who are going through the process of redefining their value statement, and I guess that's what we were just talking about, how you help them see the broader picture, what happens, and I'm very curious about this, what happens to their internal culture that has to change dramatically?
That's another great question. Culture is changing every day. Most of us don't want to admit that, and suddenly we say, oh my gosh, this company is not a family company anymore. You know, I've worked for companies and I've observed companies like that. The reality is culture is changing every day, because what is culture? It's the habitual behavior of a group of people. Well, every one of us goes to work, we learn something new, we come home, we learn something new, we go back to work. We have changed as an individual. So when you have 5, 10, 100 employees all working together, the culture of an organization shifts gradually over time. And suddenly someone will say, wait a second, do you remember when we used to, and they'll, you know, give an example. So it hasn't like one day suddenly shifted. There are examples where it does, but usually it's a very gradual shift over a period of time, because people are saying, what's important, what do we need to focus on? And it really does come from top down in most companies, but I would argue it doesn't have to. Culture starts from within the person, each individual. And I really focus a lot on that in all of my teaching. It doesn't matter how I'm talking with you, I usually focus on leadership, because leadership is a personal attribute. They've had no consistent studies on what makes a good leader. There's a lot of different theories out there. But I would argue that a good leader is a person who has a vision, has a purpose, and has the focus to make something happen, and they go do it. They naturally get followers. I'm a leader in my own organization. I'm a leader in many community organizations in that. But I'm also a follower because I find people who are better than me and that I want to emulate in some aspect of my life, and I follow them. So you're both a leader and a follower, but it comes from within, because you have this vision of either the world you want to help create or the person you want to become. And that's the driving force of a leader. But everyone within an organization can become a leader. And for me, when I unlocked that secret, that bit of knowledge, and recognized that I could lead from within, it changed everything for me.
I understand that. Tony, talk about Profit Tornado. I'm familiar with this. I've been kind of following you along as you built this thing, and I'm fascinated with it. Can you speak directly to and about Profit Tornado?
Absolutely. Profit Tornado is a 30-day training program. It is specifically designed to be delivered over the web. So what I've done is I've taken all of the sounds, things we've talked about for an hour here, and broken it down to 5-minute segments. So basically someone would come into work, log in their computer, and they would be able to watch a short 5-minute video that's on the web. And then accompanying that are lessons. So we'd have, or some exercises. So we would have, let's say, if you're doing the abundance exercise, we would go through and give them some examples of things we want them to think about, and they would respond to those questions. So it's a 30-day training program. And we've had a few different requests of how to implement the program. Different companies want to do it different ways. Ultimately, we have a program that an individual can take with no outside coaching. They just take it themselves. And it really costs nothing more than the price of basically 2 self-help books. We're at $54 for a 30-day training program. It's less than a cup of coffee a day. Mm-hmm. But it fundamentally shifts how you think over the course of 30 days. Now, in organizations, a lot of times they may want to start there and say, okay, we just want all of our employees to take this program, get the web-based video, do the exercises. But now you've got a different dynamic there. You have a community of people that work together. So now it's not just about one person's vision. It's about that department's vision, the company's vision, and we work through those things as well, to some extent through the program, but that's really where you have to get into more individualized coaching, because you have to understand where that company or that department is at. And so we've got specialized programs or customized programs for that as well.
Now, these are not just for companies. I mean, individuals can use Profit Tornado, and people like
Absolutely.
Me who have teams. I mean, I am a small web development company, and I have employees, but I also have a lot of contractors that work for me, both with my VA firm and my web development company. So they're not shut out of this just because we're not a large company, right?
Oh, absolutely. Anyone can watch the videos. Anyone can participate in the learning. In fact, the original purpose of this was I created it so that I would make it affordable enough for anyone to do. So if there's an individual whose company is not ready to make this leap yet, but that person wants to get it, that person wants to change who they are and their career path and everything else they've got going on in life, it's perfect for them.
Okay.
It's really designed because it's the individual we're changing. So I don't care how large the group is. We're looking at the individual. We're not like, as we address this, we're not looking at it like most consulting companies saying, okay, here's a whole company and you come in and do all this analysis of your whole company. I cut to the chase. Your company is the way it is because of the people you have in your company. And if you want to change your company, you've got to change your people.
That is so true, and I'm so glad you said it. Can you say that again?
I'll try.
Okay.
If you want to change your company, you've got to change your people, because the company itself, all this other stuff that a lot of other consultants look at, the whole company, how the finances are, that's the result of the people who are in your company. More specifically, it's about the thinking and the belief systems of those people. If I fear for my job in this economy, I am not coming up with creative ideas, and I'm probably not going to come up with an idea and bring it to you anyway, because I'm afraid that you may perceive it, or I'm perceiving you perceiving it,
as
you can follow that,
yeah.
as
well,
a problem.
People get very threatened.
Exactly. I should be
not
doing only my job. I should be
afraid
thinking.
Of it. Right.
Exactly.
Right.
So that's a lot of what we focus on. It's all about the individual and how the individual thinks. So this is absolutely perfect for individuals. And we're going to come up with a lot more stuff to support this product over the next 6 months. We're actually teaming with people to create a book, workshops, a whole series of things that you'll be hearing more about as we go through this as well.
I'm excited about it. So where do people go if they want to look at Profit? Has Profit Tornado been launched yet officially?
It is being launched the first week of February. And for right now, people can go to, if they want to get more information, they can go to profittornado.com. That's www.profitornado.com. Profittornado.com. One T, one word. Or if they want to get more information, want to contact us directly, they can call 877-826-2521. That's 877-826-2521.
Tony, we have a couple of people that would like to ask you questions. Do you have time to take a question or two?
Absolutely.
Okay, let me see if I can get a couple of people on the line. I have to tell y'all listening, we didn't cover nearly as much as I would have liked to. Tony is one of the best minds that I know, And I had a lot of questions, but he had a lot of information to share, and I did not want to interrupt the flow. So what I would like to do, Tony, honestly, is get you back again. As soon as Prophet Tornado launches, would you be willing to come back and talk about all of this again? Tony? Did we lose Tony?
Denise?
Did I lose you?
I'm still here.
Okay, well, did you hear what I was asking you or no?
Are you still there, Denise?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, I don't know what happened. We had a glitch in the system. But what I was asking you is if you would come back. I had a lot of questions I wanted to ask you today, and I didn't want to interrupt your flow at all because the information you share with me all the time is always so fascinating that I hate to interrupt, and you're one of the few people I don't interrupt, by the way. You should be honored. I hear somebody laughing at me. But anyway, if you would come back after Prophet Tornado launches, I would love to have you back as a guest.
I would absolutely love to do that.
Oh, thank you. Well, we have somebody on the line, so do you have a question for Tony?
Yeah, this is Judy, the journaling genius.
Hi, Judy.
Hi, Judy.
Can you hear me? Hi, Tom. So I love that you talked about passion and purpose and vision. And actually, my February workshop is called Passion and Purpose. I have a question for you. When you're looking at particularly somebody who's been in business for some time and they've lost that passion, what would be your suggestions for them to find that again?
What I've learned about myself, and I'll use myself as a proxy here, is that when I am not as passionate as I used to be, it's probably because they were passionate in the creative process, and now it's about managing the business they created. So what they really need to do is go back and identify what is it that made them excited about what they were doing in releasing that passion. And it may be that they don't really want to be the person to do this aspect of their job. You know, a lot of senior managers are promoted because they're great creative minds or they're great process minds, but when they get into that new role, they now have to shift what they are. And some researchers call it the Peters principle, you know, where they're just not as effective as they used to be. And I think it's just a matter of they've gotten out of alignment with who they really are. And the problem with the command and control structure a lot of times is that you get promoted up to the point at which you're no longer doing what you're passionate about, and you'd rather just take a demotion so you can go do what you love.
Good answer. Thank you. Yeah, that's fair. I've seen that happen a lot. I was in corporate.
You appreciate that then.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you.
Now,
thank
that
you.
Doesn't necessarily happen with entrepreneurs or online entrepreneurs, as I tag us, because we have too many ideas. We have too many thought processes and gifts from other people who give us ideas. We're never at a loss for anything. Our problem, honestly, is filtering through all of it.
That's what I was going to say. And what I've learned, I struggled with this for a while, because you can ask my wife, I have reams of notebooks of ideas that I've written down for 10 years, 15 years, that I've just taken notes and notes and notes, and they stack up. And I really got to this point that I said, I need to act on it. And as I began to share ideas, I'll just give you one example if we have a few minutes here.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay. I had an idea, and this idea had been kicking around in my mind for a while. And in June, I was meeting with some of the same folks I'm meeting with today, actually, part of my mastermind group. And I shared the idea with one of my partners in the mastermind group, just an idea. I said, you know, this is really something that helps a lot of people get over and move forward in their passion and their purpose. I said, you know, this is something I'd love to do at some point. And I just put it out there. And, you know, create a system or whatever it was. You know, it was very, very limited in structure, but I had a vision of what it was. I just shared it in two seconds.